Curtis Lewa.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Lewa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Lewa from WAPC Radio.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Lewa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
But now I'm gone to Rikers Island. He never won't go to Rikers Island. He used to walk and screw up in.
7 minutes after the hour of 5, as we continue to take you home on the Drive Home at 5 here with yours truly, Curtis Lewa. As we bust out into the Memorial Day weekend, we're going to be talking about the apprentice-style interviews that are taking now so that we can have a new correctional chief here in the city of New York, as Joseph Pont will be gone, I think, in June. But before we discuss the first person that has surfaced on the radar screen to become the next correctioner of commissioner of corrections in the city of New York, let's just look at this Memorial Day weekend, and I beg you, I beseech you, I ask you to incredibly take seriously the meaning of this weekend, because many of you will be putting lotion on at the ocean, you'll shop till you drop, you'll be at your family barbecue, you'll be hanging tight with friends. I got to believe that within your schedule, there's got to be time for you to stop by a commemoration, a wreath laying, or one of the many parades that still take place in our tri-state area to honor the war dead, those who had served in peacetime, wartime, and those who continue to serve both here in the United States and overseas. I think that's the least we can do. Just to give you an idea, I will not be here on Monday. I believe Larry Menti will be here on Monday, substituting for me. But I'll be continuing in participating in the parades to honor the war dead. First on Sunday, 12 noon in Forest Hills up metropolitan area, followed quickly in College Point, which is an old-style traditional Memorial Day parade, which takes place at 2:30 down College Point Boulevard. And then on Monday, I'll stop by the Bay Ridge Parade in Brooklyn, then do a hop, skip, and a jump across the Verrazano Bridge into Staten Island on Forest Avenue. That'll be at 12 noon for that parade. And then finish it up at Little Neck Douglaston at about 2:30 or so with that final parade. But it's something you should all craft time aside to do, a commemoration, a wreath laying, or one of the many parades that still exist. But let's talk about Rikers Island. So whether you've worked on Rikers, visited Rikers, or been housed on Rikers, whether C-74 was your place where you copped a squat, C-76 or Anna M. Cross for the emotionally disturbed who are housed there now, or Rose Singer, which is where the ladies are housed, or guys transitioning to ladies. It may well be that there's going to be a new boss soon to replace Joseph Pont, the Udiscrazia, who soon will be packing his bags and heading back to his Moose Lodge in Maine. On the line, though, to discuss the first of what might be many interviews to come is Reuven Blow, New York Daily News reporter, who's joined us before here in the Drive Home at 5. Thanks for jumping on board again, Reuven.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I understand we had our first apprentice seeking the role of becoming the New York City Correctional Department chief. Who is he and what is his background?
So he's the former chief, the head of the Washington State prison system, and he spent 33 years in that system. He started actually as a correction officer and held almost every single title and worked his way up through the system. And what's interesting, though, is he when he finally became head of the system, which has about 18,000 prisoners, there was a pretty gigantic scandal. They had a system, a computer system, that apparently was involved in how they were deciding or calculating what inmates should be released. And they realized that they had accidentally released 3,000 inmates over a 13-year period.
Hold on a second. They had accidentally released 3,000 inmates under their charge over a period of 13 years in the Washington State Correctional System?
Correct, correct. Now, he says that it was not his you know, he had, you know, just recently taken over the department. You know, he had served in sort of leadership roles up until that point. But he says that, you know, it was a computer system that was not set up by him, and that it was, you know, he was not in the research department or the computer department, and he kind of wasn't aware of, you know, the problem, and didn't start it and wasn't really aware of the problem. But it, you know, it was just a really a big deal. It actually made some national headlines at the time. And interestingly, or sadly, two of the inmates who were accidentally released went on and were charged with murders after they had been released.
So two of the inmates who incorrectly were released because of what he claims was a computer glitch went out to murder.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And, no, what did, I'm sorry. They went, they, after they were released, committed an, like a murder, committed a murder after they were released.
Now, who is this Kennedy? What is his name?
Dan, and I'm terrible at pronouncing his last name, so I'm going to like kind of pass on pronouncing his last name. Dan Palchuk, I think, is how do you pronounce it. And he was actually given a tour yesterday, or on Wednesday, by the current commissioner, Joseph Pont. He was taken around Rikers Island and taken around all the facilities and introduced to the top brass. And I talked to Dan briefly yesterday, and, you know, he said, hey, yeah, I'm interested in taking this job. He currently lives in Olympia in Washington state, and said, hey, you know, if I get this job, I'd move down to New York, and, you know, I'd really want to kind of take on this challenge. He actually also does currently, he is a scholar with NYU, so he has that sort of academic background as well.
Now, Reuven Barr of the Daily News, you mentioned at the height of this scandal of the computer glitch that caused 3,000 inmates to be released in a 13-year period of time in the Washington state penal system, that it received national attention. As a result of this, did he get sacked? Did he get fired? Did he resign? Did he remain on the job? How was that? What was the disposition of that?
So he was just on the job for about close to 6 months, and he resigned. It was really tension-filled situation. The local elected officials there were furious, and he says that he resigned because he felt that that was sort of the right thing to do to allow the department to move on. You know, he feels that it's sort of, he didn't say this directly, but he kind of insinuated as much that he felt like it was unfairly, you know, associated with the scandal, essentially. But yeah, he was only there for six, he was only in charge of the of running the Washington State system for about 6 months, but he did spend his entire 33-year career there in different ranks.
I understand that, and obviously it's got more of a population base than Maine had, but why, oh why, since ours is the largest urban correctional department of any city in the nation, are we reaching to areas that I would describe as huckleberry areas, as areas that really don't have large urban-based populations or actually correctional officers who come from large urban-based populations, as is similar to what happens in the five boroughs of the city of New York? Has the de Blasio administration explained why we're reaching out to Washington State to get a guy who had to resign from his position?
They have not. You know, and they said that they're interviewing other people. And, you know, there is a history here. And, you know, as you're familiar, I'm sure, New York City's, you know, difficult to compare it to, right? Other big cities, you know, don't even come close in size. You know, and the Correction Union has not specifically spoken about, you know, the Washington State candidate, but they have explained that they want to see somebody internally be promoted. And they also were very specific about asking somebody who has experience running a jail system as opposed to a prison system. Now, I'm guessing most of your listeners don't know the difference. Jails, usually it's, you know, for under a year, if you're sentenced for under a year, it's more of a transitional period. Prison systems where inmates are there longer, who have been sentenced to longer stretches.
This is incredible. This is the first candidate of other candidates to come. And I would have thought that he would have been disqualified simply because the way he had to leave the Washington State Correctional Department. But I appreciate the exclusive interview you wrote up today, Reuven Barr. If you haven't seen it, try to get a hard copy out there in the newsstand. If you're old school like I am, if you're a new Jack, just go online. And I got to tell you this. This is the Achilles heel, other than dealing with the homeless people and the emotionally disturbed, for this mayor, Comrade Bill de Blasio. Not my mayor. I didn't vote for him. The part-time mayor, the dope from Park Slope. And this is the best he can do, to have the udiscrazia, the shanda, the outgoing commissioner. He can't leave fast enough, as far as I'm concerned. Joseph Pont, who's going to go back to the Moose Lodge, where he can hang out with the moose and the caribou in Maine and trap lobsters off the coast. Have him escort him, the new candidate, around Rikers Island and the barge off Hunts Point and the Brooklyn House of Detention and the tombs in downtown Manhattan. This is like the blind leading the blind. This is an urban population base. The COs, the screws, the correctional officers are from urban areas. The inmates, those who haven't made bail or are being detained, they're from urban areas. And we're bringing in these huckleberries from Leave It to Beaverland, Father Knows Best, Little House on the Prairie. Hey, Bill de Blasio, oofah to you.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Those who practiced like you.
Deep into the headlines, deep into the streets.
This is good.
Deep into your eyeballs.
How disgusting.
Studio View is live right now. WABCRadio.com.
As we continue on the drive home at 5. Oh, there's a proposition up in Albany, capital land, for what I'm going to call the Jimmy Cap Law. That's right. It's called stealthing condom sabotage or sabotage. But before we get into that, some breaking news as we hook up with Ken Lovett, the New York Daily News Albany Bureau Chief. Thanks for joining us again on the drive home at 5, Ken.
Oh, good to be here.
So, over the past course of maybe a week, Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, has vacillated as to whether he will march in the Puerto Rican Day Parade, won't march, because of the honor bestowed upon Oscar Lopez Rivera, the leader of FALN. You just told our phone screener, Mike Coscarelli, that in fact, he has finally made a decision and will not waffle any longer?
Yes, he will not march. His office made the announcement at about 4:15 on a Friday afternoon heading into the Memorial Day weekend with a statement in which the governor's spokeswoman, not the governor himself, but his spokeswoman, said that he has great respect for the Puerto Rican people and their traditions, but unfortunately he will not march in the parade. Doesn't give a reason, doesn't mention the controversy, just says he won't march.
I see the Attorney General, who actually took over the parade committee because of its fiscal ineptness, he also has said he will not be marching, but that's because he has scheduled something else in advance.
Right, so really the biggest names that will be, you know, Univision pulled out, the Yankees pulled out, the Daily News pulled out. The biggest names that will be marching now are Mayor de Blasio, City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito, and the Bronx Borough President Ruben Diaz Jr.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about that momentarily, but I want to focus on what I call the Jimmy Cap Law, or others are calling the Stealth Condom Sabotage Law, that would make it a felony if you do what to a condom or prophylactic?
Basically, if you tamper with or remove without consent. So under the bill that is under consideration, if you are having consensual sex and then your partner removes the condom or damage the condom deliberately, that could be a felony, punishable by up to 4 years in prison if that bill passed.
So both parties are in agreement that they're going to have sex, safe sex. They've got the urge to merge. They're getting it on. And in the course of having sex, one person is charged with either damaging the prophylactic or the foam or the condom, the Jimmy Cap. Now the person proposing this legislation, Ken Lovett, how do they expect to be able to prove this, since we're not talking group sex here? We're usually talking two people together.
Well, that's the hard part, right? I mean, because if, you know, there are many reasons a person could say the person took it off and the person could say they couldn't. I guess it would be like any investigation. You know, this has happened in other states and, you know, men and people have put it online that it, you know, that they did it, or maybe they text the girl afterward and say that they did it. So, I mean, if there's evidence, but you got to figure it would be really hard to prove absent anyone actually putting it up online that they did such a thing.
Now, Ken, we always used to operate under the old wives' tale that certain woman who would want to get pregnant by the guy they're with in advance would come with the condoms, you know, the Trojans, and then take a tiny little pin and prick it ever
that,
so.
That would be a felony, too, under this.
I know, but that turned out to be an old wives' tale. You know, guys believed it because, in fact, they impregnated the woman, but they wanted to say, oh, no, no, no. She took a pinprick, and she made holes in the condom. It wasn't me.
Yeah.
I was trying to have safe sex. I was trying to prevent an unwanted pregnancy.
It is a – look, I'm sure it's happened. It really came into the mainstream. The name of it, I guess, is now called stealthing, and it really came into the mainstream in April when this law student at the time wrote about it and talked about some legal remedies. I spoke to the woman who wrote the paper about it, and she said, you know, she's not really looking for make it a crime. She would like to maybe make it a civil issue where you could sue the person, but the law that is being proposed by Francisco Moyer in Queens would make it a felony.
Let me tell you something, Ken. We need some preventative care here. I think, you know, like we have Department of Building Inspectors. We have those who inspect restaurants, right? Now they're going to be inspecting food carts. That we have condom inspectors, if necessary, watching the actual act, the sexual act, to make sure that nobody's fiddling, messing, damaging the condom or any prophylactic device. And that's their job. In fact, it'll create great employment. They could be Jimmy Cap inspectors.
Well, someone said to me, you'd end up having a videotape every encounter.
Well, think of it. In the porn industry, you pay extra for that.
But look, I mean, the reality is it's a horrible thing to do to someone if they didn't know. But, again, I don't know whether really, you know, whether a law like that would be, would you be able to prove anything, you know, short of someone confessing online or on a text or whatever.
Do appreciate that. That's Ken Lovett of New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News. He's the Albany bureau chief. And if you'd like to know which Weisenheimer is responsible for suggesting this legislation, it's Assemblyman Francisco Moyer of Queens. You know, I get a sense he's just got too much time, Francisco, on his hands.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this scene better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
.541, the controversy continues, as you just heard Ken Lovett, Albany bureau chief of the New York Daily News, announcing that the governor just moments ago decided he will not participate in the annual Puerto Rican Day parade up Fifth Avenue on June 11th. The attorney general will not be there. Major corporations have said ixnay this year. We'll be back next year. And earlier today, showing solidarity with Melissa Mark, Viva Libre Puerto Rico, City Council Speaker of the 51 Slackers and Deadbeats there, who has embraced Oscar Lopez Rivera, the head of the FALN, responsible for 120 bombings during the height of that organization's war on America. It was Ruben Diaz Jr. who decided, oh, no, I'm marching with Puerto Rican Day Parade up Fifth Avenue.
Fact is that Oscar Lopez has paid dearly for all of the crimes that he was convicted of.
And then he went on to say,
I get it, but this parade is more than about one person. It always has been. You're going to see hundreds of thousands, if not over a million people expressing that pride.
And interesting, because the office of Ruben Diaz Jr., the borough president, will constantly contact us, and they want us to promote, you know, Ruben's overseeing the Domino's tournament on 138th and Brook Avenue in the South Bronx. Or you'll say, oh, we're searching for the coqui, the Puerto Rican frog in Cretona Park. Yeah, that's right. We're offering prizes if people can actually bring back a coqui. We say no. So we reached out to Ruben Diaz Jr. today to actually come on the show and explain why he's supporting the honor that's being bestowed on Oscar Lopez Rivera, the head of the FALN. And this is what we got. Yeah, he's a chicken. He won't come on. All of a sudden, he's got a fever in his foot. He's too busy. You know, he was with the mayor there, swapping spit as they were patting each other on the back so hard they'll have to go for chiropractic adjustments with a renewal project completed at Orchard Beach. But on the line, a different Ruben to discuss this. It's Ruben Estrada up in Orange County, but a man who was originally from the barrio. Chairman of the American Latino Coalition. Thanks for joining us here on the Drive Home at 5, Ruben Estrada.
Curtis, anytime. You know that. And by the way, I want to give you condolences on your mother.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Speak to dad, as you know, and we've been friends for a long time. Thank you for having me on, man.
Well, look, Ruben, I chose you because Ruben Diaz Jr. was too chicken to come on this this program and explain why he's supporting the parade. What's your position on the Puerto Rican Day Parade?
My position is very simple. This is an iconic event. You know it better than anyone else does. You've been involved with it for many years. The Guardian Angels have been marching in there, as well as many other groups. This, as a child in El Barrio, me going to the parade was the biggest event of the year. All right, my mother would talk to me and explain to me, listen, that's this town, that's that town, this is Aguadilla, this is Guaguas. All the floats, the music, the colors, I mean, so the dampering that they've done already, they're sending mixed messages to a community. I think that this is all, and the person and the culprit behind this is not necessarily just Oscar and also Melissa. This is the Attorney General. He's the one who promulgated this whole thing by the demise of the Board of Directors, changing the players so that it could reflect this kind of stuff. So when the governor says, oh, I'm not going to march, or this one's not going to march, nah, don't be placating because they're placating. It is not true. They are in support of all this stuff. The fact that they put Melissa up is because Melissa is a lame duck. So let her go down the tube. That's the way they look at it, and they're playing with the Puerto Rican community and their vote, which I think is ridiculous.
But if you listen to Ruben Diaz Jr., the Bronx Borough President, or Melissa Mark, Viva Libre Puerto Rico, Speaker of the 51 Slackers and Deadbeats in the City Council, Ruben Estrada, you would think that Oscar Lopez Rivera was lionized in the Puerto Rican community. Is this true or not true?
Not at all. I think the Puerto Rican community, and this is, and I just read recently that she's trying to blame, quote-unquote, the right wing of Puerto Rico for all this craziness that's occurring. No, it has nothing to do with that. Speak to anybody in El Barrio. Speak in Brooklyn, in Queens. The Puerto Ricans are saying, no, we don't want this guy. This parade should go on. They should never have even thought about giving an award. I think for whatever it's worth, Ramon Fellas, the Bobby Garcias of the world, the Herman Badillos, they'd be turning in their graves today.
Can this parade recover from this mass exodus this year to the glory that it one time held up Fifth Avenue?
Well, let me tell you something. It is going to survive. We are survivors. The Puerto Rican community is going to come together. What we do have to do is take this, and I'm hoping that the governor and the attorney general decide, well, the mistake we made on that board, let's fix it. Let's correct that. Let's get a board that's truly reflective of the Puerto Rican community, not only in New York, but in Puerto Rico also, which is sad to say they're not doing. Right now, their whole agenda is because also you have a plebiscite coming up in Puerto Rico on June 11th. This is all a prelude to that. So they could win some votes, especially for independence.
Do appreciate that. That's Ruben Estrada, chairman of the American Latino Coalition. He's referring to the plebiscite that will determine once again whether the residents of the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico choose Commonwealth status, which is always one, statehood, which it has nudged out, or independence, which has lost and rarely gets into the double digits. Although, remember years ago there was the controversy to put the coquí on a Puerto Rican flag or not to put the coquí, which is the frog from the island of Puerto Rico. And we thought that was a big controversy. That pales in comparison to the decision to honor this terrorist, this enemy of America, Oscar Lopez Rivera of the FALN.
Curtis
Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Come on, go on and get down. 5:53 as we work our way into the Memorial Day weekend. And look, we've had a lot of mass transit problems of late, not just down below us 17 floors with Amtrak and New Jersey Transit and the Long Island Railroad, but also the IRT-IND-BMT run by the MTA money-taking agency. Today alone, no A-train service, C-train service, trains being rerouted, signal problems, the whole nine yards. But there's another problem that just doesn't get dealt with. Although, when Police Commissioner Bratton was in charge of the NYPD in the first year, when Comrade Bill de Blasio, your mayor, not mine, I didn't elect him, took in City Hall and started calling the shots. Well, all of a sudden, they were making arrests in the subway for dancing in the subways. You know, these crews will come on. They're all disorderly. They're out of control. They're talking trash. They've got groupies with them, a lot of the girls that they fight over, or they fight over the cash when all of a sudden they start dispersing it and figuring out who gets more than the other guy who is doing a series of moves on the train. Normally from 59th and Columbus Circle up to 125th on the express, the A or the D, and then they turn around and come back and continue to do their dances. They do hand glides and windmills and helicopters with three people, and they start swinging from the top of the pole as they pop and they do the wave and the electronic boogie and the caterpillar and the worm and then the spider. And then they start flipping their baseball bat cap hats from their feet to their head. And a lot of people will give them a contribution, but a lot of people have been bum rushed by them. There's been a lot of fights, a lot of arguments, and a lot of disputes. So in the first year of Bill de Blasio's administration, when Chief Bratton was making this a priority, in the year 2013, New York City Transit police officers made 153 arrests for dancing in the subways and 385 arrests for panhandling. Because you can see them. They come in one after another with some sad sack story about how they're down on their luck. They don't have a job. They need to stay in a hostel. They need to stay in an SRO hotel. They don't want to stay in a shelter. Meantime, they take that money. They go out and get their Mad Dog 2020, their Wild Irish Rose, or they're getting their synthetic marijuana, their K2, or they're getting some rocks and beaming themselves up to Scotty in the glass pipe. And they do it over and over and over again. So far this year, the transit police is on pace to make fewer arrests for dancing and panhandling. As of May 21st, they made only 71 arrests for dancing and 9 for panhandling. And they have tactical air support from the Legal Aid Society, which is saying you should never make arrests, period. People should have a right to dance on the subways. They should have a right to sponge for chump change. And then it's followed by the New York Civil Liberties Union, Donna Lieberman, who always wants to stand in the way of people who are just trying to get a little peace and quiet, get a little spot to cop a squat for themselves on the packed subways. She insists arresting people for dancing on the trains and for begging on the trains, it's un-American. Well, I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, since I run into these gavones all the time, these young huckleberries, they want to dance for money. But then when all of a sudden they're shilling for shimoles and you don't give them the right kind of coin or you don't give them the right kind of bill and they start eye fornicating you and mad dogging you and then push leads to shove and now you're surrounded by 6, 8, 10 or more and all of a sudden you've got your family with you or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your husband and your wife and they make a situation in the subway that is already becoming worse and worse in terms of the quality of life to a situation in which all of a sudden you don't want to take the subways any longer. And even with all the delays, even with all the track changes and the rerouting on the weekend and the signals that aren't working because the computers are not just synchronized, this problem just will not go away. Because Comrade Bill de Blasio, your mayor, not mine, that dope from Park Slope, the part-time mayor, has window shades on his eyes, cotton balls in his ears, and a zipper on his mouth when it comes to quality of life violations in the subways. Bottom line is, he doesn't take the subways and will not take the subways, and he just doesn't care. So basically, he's saying to all of you, tough noogies.